It's time for your KDNK local newscast for this Friday morning, December 2nd. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. For this week's Eye on Crime, Amy Haddon Marsh takes a look at Carbondale and Aspen, plus a Garfield County case.
From November 10th to the 17th, Carbondale police handled 232 calls for service, including one arrest for DUI, one for driving while under restraint, and an outstanding warrant. They issued one citation for careless driving as a result of an accident. Officers also took a report of a hit and run at the rec center and a blue truck doing donuts in the Little Blue Preschool parking lot at 1 in the afternoon on Monday the 14th. In Aspen over the Thanksgiving weekend, police made three similar arrests, including one DUI, one for driving under revocation, and an outstanding failure to appear warrant. And the Post-Independent reports that Matthew Ogden, who was arrested in 2015 in connection with the death of his month-old daughter Sarah Ogden, pleaded guilty last week to reckless child abuse resulting in death, a Class 3 felony. The charge came as a result of a plea deal that includes a prison sentence of 30 to 40 years, as opposed to the original charge of first-degree murder, which carries a sentence of life in prison. That's it for this week's Eye on Crime. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
A new state website will allow residents to track how state government is performing in five key areas, including education, the economy, energy, and the environment, Rocky Mountain Community Radio reporter Benta Berkland reports.
The goal is to take a page from the private sector and have clear performance measures to reach a long-term plan. Lieutenant Governor and Chief Operating Officer Donna Lynn is spearheading the effort.
What's brand new is how public we're going to be about this.
Each goal will say how close the state is to meeting it. For instance, rural broadband access. Only 70% of households currently have it. By next year, Lynn says that number should be at 85%.
We've got six or seven departments that we are holding accountable to focus on improving this.
It's not clear how many people will view the website and offer suggestions or feedback, but the hope is to make state government more customer friendly. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Scientist Sarah Hawkins released a report for U.S. Geological Survey in June that found the Mancos Shale Formation of the Piceance Basin could contain 40 times more natural gas than previously estimated. Hawkins, based in Denver, made two presentations yesterday in Rifle at the Northwest Colorado Oil and Gas Forum in the morning and the Garfield County Energy Advisory Board meeting last night. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh and Gavin Dahl report.
Over 150 people attended the meetings yesterday to listen to presentations by Sarah Hawkins, who was joined last night by Robert Downey, VP of Operations for Gunnison Energy.
If you look at the USGS fact sheet for this assessment, you will see that our results are listed in a range. So we make probabilistic estimates using probabilistic inputs, and so our results are also a range. And so the 95% chance is that we have at least 34 trillion cubic feet of gas. And then on the high end, we could have as much as 112 trillion cubic feet of gas of undiscovered, technically recoverable resources within the Mancos Shale and the Piceance Basin.
And the key takeaway here is that the Mancos is a massively thick deposit of gas. It's just basically gas contained in a mudstone. It's just, this is mudstone. So you're looking at 30 to 40% clay content. And it's been squished and cooked, and it's tight, but it's full of gas, and the gas is dispersed throughout the entire 4,000 feet. So there's a lot of gas in place, but it's hard to get out. And in a typical well, gas might move 100 feet in 30 years in this rock, so it moves slowly. But there's a lot of gas in place in the center part of the basin where you've got the deepest deposit, it's most overpressured, it's cooked. There'd be over a trillion cubic feet of gas per square mile of land, so there's a lot of gas in place.
It's all theoretical.
That's Leslie Robinson, chair of the Grand Valley Citizens Alliance, an industry watchdog group.
The presenter talked about the possibility of this area being over a huge reservoir of natural gas, but whether it's economically feasible is another question that she could not answer. So, like we heard about oil shale, that Rifle was on top of the largest oil shale reserve in the world, and we were going to become massive producers of energy, that never panned out because of fracking. Hopefully, before they start drilling thousands of holes in western Colorado, other forms of renewable energy will be a lot more market feasible than drilling a bunch of holes.
But how does this technologically accessible gas become economically viable? David Boyd, spokesperson for the BLM, says infrastructure is key.
In some of these areas, if there hasn't been development yet, there's not the infrastructure in place, like pipelines and compressor stations and those sorts of things. And so that adds a lot of cost to the company. And so that's something that the industry looks at as they're trying to decide where to drill, and, you know, and then when they drill and they start producing gas, is it enough to warrant building all this infrastructure?
Downey says drilling in the Mancos Formation began close to when prices dropped, which has slowed development. He says the current price of $3.50 per million BTUs would need to increase to $4 to make drilling in the Piceance worth it.
How significant would, like, Jordan Cove Pipeline or other export be to the economic viability of the USGS numbers?
It's huge. It's huge. As a gas producer, one of the biggest risks you have is gas price. You can't control the price. If you can lock your gas into a long-term contract, if someone wants to buy that gas over a 20-year period of time at a known price, you can drill to that.
David Ludlam, executive director of the West Slope Colorado Oil and Gas Association, agrees and says that Western Colorado has been courting Japanese buyers.
We, along with some of our local governments, sent letters to the customers at Jordan Cove when we get further in the regulatory process, wanting them to come out and meet with us, visit with us, learn more about us. We are currently working on a white paper called The Piceance to the Pacific Rim 2 that will help update potential customers about what we have to offer. And those conversations started years ago and hopefully will continue into the future decades.
Who exactly has the Colorado Oil and Gas Association contacted in terms of Japanese or overseas buyers?
There's two customers that were announced about 6 months ago, JERA and ITOCHU.
We would hate to see pipelines crossing the Rockies from western Colorado to the coast. Not that there aren't pipelines already, but to carry enough natural gas to export. And frankly, I don't see why our local residents have to sacrifice their quality of life, air quality and water quality, just to warm homes in Japan.
Downey offered his own snapshot of what future development is going to look like.
I think we're looking at pads that have 48 wells or more, laterals spaced about 880 feet apart. When you frack these shale, You propagate a frack that's about a tenth of an inch wide, 400 feet tall. It's like splitting wood.
I'm here to ask all of you to take your businesses, cease your drilling, leave our state.
That's longtime Garfield County resident Doug Sogg. He spoke in front of more than 60 industry and local government officials at the Garfield County Energy Advisory Board meeting in Rifle Thursday night.
I'd like you to pack up your equipment, not come back, unless you guys intend to do some skiing. For those of you not inclined to leave, I'd ask you to find a job that doesn't harm our people and our water supplies. I was just looking through the paper, and I know McDonald's is hiring. I got some connections there. I can get you guys a job. If you don't feel comfortable with that type of civic responsibility, I'd ask that you remember my face and my name, because I'll be out there getting in front of your trucks, getting in front of your equipment, slowing you down, and taking a chunk out of your profit margins.
For KDNK, I'm Gavin Dahl.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
Our Congressman Scott Tipton is a vocal advocate for the proposed Jordan Cove pipeline, but extracting and burning all those hydrocarbons has serious climate implications. You can count on the KDNK News team to continue to follow this major national story as it develops. As Colorado parents and caregivers tackle their holiday shopping lists, a new report is reminding them to keep toy safety top of mind. Eric Kalatis has more.
As Colorado parents and caregivers tackle their holiday shopping lists, a new report is reminding them to keep toy safety top of mind. The U.S. Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG, Education Fund released its annual Trouble in Toyland 2016 report last week, focused this year on toy recalls. Consumer program advocate with the group Mike Litt says more than 40 recalls of toys and children's products have been announced since January of 2015, yet their research found more than a dozen of the items might still be for sale.
The ones that we were still able to find online included those that had exceeded the limits on lead. They were magnet hazards. They also included chargers and batteries that overheated and could cause burns or fires.
Litt says thanks to the efforts of safety advocates, parents, policymakers, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission, toys are safer than ever before, but he cautions that adults should still be vigilant by examining toys for hazards, both those they're considering buying and those already in the home. Recall information also is posted online at cpsc.gov. Litt notes that over the past 30 years, the annual report has contributed to more than 150 recalls, as well as regulatory actions. He says that includes a 2008 law that expanded the scope of the CPSC.
It gave the commission more tools to speed recalls of dangerous toys. It banned toxic metals and certain phthalates from many types of toys and children's products, and then also required mandatory third-party testing of toys and other children's products by manufacturers.
The recalled items listed in the report that are available online include die-cast metal cars with sharp edges, a little digger toy that contains excessive lead levels, and a pacifier clip that could break, posing a choking hazard. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
State transportation officials addressed lawmakers yesterday about new ways to fund roads and bridges and about being ready for any changes coming at the federal level. Penta Berkland reports.
The briefing before the Joint Budget Committee is part of the budget writing process. The Colorado Department of Transportation gets less than 10% of its budget from the state. But Director Shailen Batt says he's glad it's a high priority for lawmakers.
And I was very encouraged last year by all of the conversation around funding transportation. I'm hopeful that this year we can coalesce around a couple of options.
Both parties have not yet agreed on how to get more money into roads and bridges. Democratic Representative Millie Hamner of Dillon serves on the budget committee and says road conditions and traffic are what her voters want her to address.
Transportation issues are probably the number one concern.
President-elect Donald Trump has discussed a $1 trillion infrastructure package for states, and it's something Colorado officials want to be prepared for. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.